Beers and Tears would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land from which we conduct this podcast, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their continued connection to the land and waterways and sky of this beautiful place, and we pay our respects to elders past and present, and extend that respect to all First Nations people present today, and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded.
In disguise, fading sparkle and shameless self-certainty, and it goes for my eyes. Long nights have laid away.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Beers and Tears. Today I'm joined with Georgia Mooney. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I am good. How are you? I've taken my tea and I'm backed out.
No, that's okay. I was like, really bold choice to drink your tea right now.
You came for me quicker than I was expecting. Sorry about that.
Well, you're about to release an album called Full of Moon on August the 25th. Tell me about this album title, Full of Moon. It suggests like an abundance of potential, but it's also kind of a play on your last name and...
Yeah, sort of. Well, it actually came from it comes from a Joni Mitchell lyric. So there's a song called The Last Time I Saw Richard, and in it the lyrics go, the last time I saw Richard was Detroit in 68, and he told me all romantics meet the same fate, cynical and drunk and boring someone in some dark cafe. I'll get there. And then it says, you laugh, you think you're immune, just look at your eyes, they're full of moon. And I always thought that that was a really nice kind of way of describing someone who's kind of full of romance and hope and positivity and kind of that as having eyes full of moon. You know, you kind of just, yeah, you've got moons and stars in your eyes and you kind of just seeing the world through a bit of a romantic lens. And it's a bit... yeah, it's something a bit sort of cinematic about it or something. And so I liked that idea and it felt like a nice fit for the record, which is, I think, quite romantic and lush and a little bit sort of, you know, hopelessly longing and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, awesome.
And then I did think it would be funny because my name is Mooney, yeah, to include a moon in there and just be all very moonish. Because there's something funny about Georgia Mooney, full of moon. I don't know why.
No, I love it. I was like, this is gold. Do you have, like, what's the imagery looking like for this album? The cover and kind of like your, the way that you visualize this album generally and like how you would like to present it to a live space if you could.
Yeah, that's a cool question. Well, I really like creating a visual world to accompany music because I think that's a really fun part of it. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing about doing a bit of a long campaign where you release a few singles because it gives you a lot of opportunities to create, beautiful visual things, whether it be videos or photos or doing an album cover and all of that stuff. It's why I love vinyl and, you know, merch. So I've been working with this beautiful graphic designer called Monica Higgins, and the theme that we've had kind of across all of the singles and the artwork has been like old cinema, old movie posters, so kind of like beautiful, lush, really sort of slightly technicolor musical movie posters from like the 50s and 60s, those ones that you see that sort of look half drawn and half photo, and they're all a little bit melodramatic, and I think the music fits that world. It feels to me, because it's, you know, it's got so many layers and it's all very lush and rich, and in terms of both sort of the themes and also just the sound of it, it feels quite cinematic. So we kind of have lent into that world of things. And then, yeah, and then the cover is this beautiful picture that my friend Brian Downey took of it's kind of funny because the picture is me lying in a crater of on the moon. But in reality, on the day I was lying in like a little tiny baby inflatable pool. And and then later on, he's so magical. He like created a moon with a tortilla. He like put a tortilla over a watermelon and then somehow dented little kind of craters in it and painted it gray, and then like superimposed this moon in with the photo so that it looks like I'm lying on the moon. I'm actually lying on a tortilla in a watermelon. There you go. It's very cool. But so the whole thing is kind of this like romantic, cinematic, lush, theatrical melodrama vibe.
Awesome. And yeah, you mentioned that it's quite cinematic, and I read that you've taken a bit of inspiration from like the theatrical sounds of ABBA, which I have been pumping ABBA at the moment. Like I'm really in like a really strong ABBA era of my life.
Oh my god.
So I'm really excited when I read that.
Have you really?
Yeah, I've been listening to the Voulez-Vous album like on repeat. It's like my favorite one ever. Yeah. And the whole album is just so good.
They're the best.
Yeah, they're so good.
I don't know. I just feel like I just love ABBA more and more with the passing of time. And I kind of think obviously they're not an underrated band. They're a very popular band. But I think that their songwriting is so incredible, and it's really kind of quite complex and super melodic. And yeah, it was definitely an inspiration for the production. I think also as well, because I made this album during lockdown and during the pandemic, ABBA is like the most joyful thing that you can listen to. And so I was listening to a lot of ABBA, and it's crept into my subconscious. But the production style that they have of kind of layering things up, you know, where they will have loads and loads and loads of vocal parts. So there's like four singers, but they'll each record themselves and then another part, and they'll sort of be like three layers of each vocalist. And then they have this sort of quite cinematic sound because of that, and the way that they layer it all up. It's not just a simple band in a room and, you know, a couple of singers. They've really, that specific production, I think, played a bit of a role in the way that we did things too. I just love the campness, and I really love Eurovision. So even though my music is not exactly Eurovision centric, I feel like there's a part of me that's always striving in some way to be more Eurovision-y.
Yeah. Totally. And speaking of the production process, the album was co-produced with Noah Georgeson and also involved musicians from like three other continents who were contributing to this record. How was it working with people from all over the place during a time where you couldn't really be with one another? And I guess like how did that impact your recording process and like the overall sound and feel of the record?
Yeah, it was really interesting. Obviously, it was definitely not the plan. And Noah is based in LA, and we were going to record in this beautiful studio in San Francisco and, you know, sort of stay there for a couple of weeks and have a bit of a camp and just bat it all out. And then when the pandemic happened and suddenly no one could go anywhere, it was the first time for either of us that we'd done anything long distance, but we thought we may as well just see how we go. And it was kind of something that I ended up really valuing. I mean, for one thing, I was quite sick with long COVID for 18 months, so I couldn't do heaps of stuff. So having something where we could chip away slowly from afar was really lovely. And it became such a kind of vehicle for a bit of escapism from of the craziness that was happening around us. And I think you can sort of hear that in the music as well. Like I definitely escaped into it and it became bigger and more kind of romantic and dreamy. And I think that's the feeling that I wanted to have for people as well, is that it's like music to kind of daydream to, and it is sort of hopefully is a bit transcendent. It takes you away, you know. So there were definitely pros and cons. I still have never met Noah, which is really weird.
Yeah, wow.
Met someone we worked with really intimately for like nearly 2 years, and he also hates video calls. So we would just get on the phone and have like 4-hour phone calls like teenagers. And I've never like seen his face, which in these days feels really
so strange.
I know, it feels crazy. So I'm just trusting that it is Noah, to be honest. And then for the musicians, I just really kind of cold emailed my favorite session musicians, and who happened to be based all around the world. And it was right at the time when everyone was at home and all the gigs had stopped and no one had really locked into kind of doing stuff remotely, or it was still all very new and fresh, and I guess everyone was available, so everyone said yes. And so I managed to assemble this really beautiful band who I would have otherwise never have got in one room, you know. So that part of it was really cool, and I think we benefited from having this long project that we were all working on together. It was a real emotional outlet, but also giving each other a bit of space and time to work on things, which is really different to being in the studio where you are aware that, you know, it's like $100 an hour at least, and you've only got a couple of days, and you're being watched and you're being recorded. And I think the fact that I could say, just here are some references and go away with this and come back to me when you're ready, was really nice and kind of helped us create something that was a bit more imaginative, I think.
Mm, yeah, totally. Was it strange for you to kind of like entrust your production process with someone that you kind of had never met and / never really seen? Like, was that like a strange interaction for you?
It is strange. And the producer relationship is such an unusual one, because you are immediately kind of being as vulnerable as you possibly can with someone. And you are putting a lot of trust in them. I mean, I know the records that Noah had made in the past, and I know I have friends who have worked with him before, and we just immediately got along so well that I had a really good feeling about it, and actually had no you know, stress or doubt at any point, which is a really rare thing. And maybe as well because we weren't in the same room, you know, our stresses just didn't eventuate. Because we had a bit more space or something. But it was interesting as well during that time, you know, because he's in LA and things were really awful there, and I was here in Australia where things were okay for a lot of it, but we were very heavily locked down, and so we would just compare sort of war stories, and it was like being pen pals, which was really nice. But I'm someone who I really enjoy songwriting by myself. I really like writing the songs all by myself, and I'm quite private about that and kind of don't show them to anyone until I have a sense that I'm happy. But then for the recording part and the production part, I really love collaborating. So I like to pick musicians or, producers whose work I like, and then let them put their, you know, flavor into it. And I think that it's just, certainly at that point you only benefit from getting more people involved and trusting, trusting more brains. And I would never have, you know, thought of some of the parts that some of these musicians came up with. So I'm endlessly grateful that they contributed their talents, and you kind of steer the ship a bit, but it's also quite nice to be like, what would you do?
Yeah.
You guys. Yeah.
Awesome. And yeah. You have a track on the record called Break It Off, which is described as one of your melodramatic and theatrical songs of the record. but it also features a really cool video with Aerobics Queens, Retro Sweat. Right. Can you tell me a little bit about the track and the creative process of the track, but also the video that accompanies it and how that whole collaboration and concept came about?
Yeah, that was so fun. The song is definitely the most aberish on the record, I reckon. I really love it. I had the chorus sort of in my head, the chords and the melody, for years and years, and I couldn't really find a place for it for a long time. And then I finally did. It's weird how that can happen sometimes. You can have like a bit of something, like a melody or a chord progression, and you can never, it can take a while to work out who its kind of neighboring melodic friends are. So the song is kind of about being in a relationship with someone who's, you know, is no good for you, but you're too infatuated with them to break it off yourself. So you kind of need them to break it off with you in a ruthless and clearly defined way so that you can be forced to
such a specific feeling, and it's so universal. It's like, why haven't we sorted it out?
No. So yeah, it's that feeling. And I think because it is a bit, that concept is a bit dramatic. It's like, oh God, I can't possibly leave. Can you please throw me, like, just dump me ruthlessly so I can finally be rid of you? So it feels like, it felt like it needed something a bit camp and silly and theatrical. And the music came together in a really fun way. I was really happy with the way the song came together. And I also, you know, compare this partner who's no good for me to Benedict Cumberbatch as like a yardstick for the dream man, which is sort of a bit silly. And then the video, that was also kind of all through lockdown. I was really obsessed with Retro Sweat, and they are this amazing, aerobics troupe who are based in Sydney, but they created these online videos, which they still do, I believe, and online workout videos, which are just the most beautiful, campus, crazy things. And I always thought it would be so fun to do a music video with them. And I sort of pitched it to Shannon, who's the boss, is the creator. And she really was like, yeah, and then just sort of took it and ran with it, to the point where, you know, we had a couple of meetings. She booked everything. She booked the set designer. She booked the cinematographer. She organized the costumes. We kind of brainstormed ideas. I was like, I'm imagining it. It's sort of this, smoke machines and chiffon and like Kate Bushy, Pat Benatar, 80s kind of like power ballady drama. But yeah, within that, whatever you think. And then I sort of didn't know how it was going to be, and then turned up on the day and was like, I'm just trusting Shannon, and it was amazing. So so happy with how that turned out. And I got to make a sparkly cat suit with Benedict Cumberbatch's face all over it. So, you know, it ticked off a lot of dreams for me, very niche, weird dreams. And I have that cat suit in my cupboard, and I don't know where I'm going to wear it, but it's
some
available.
Some Halloween party or something.
Yeah, something. It ended up being one of my favourite kind of songs and videos. And that's another, really fun example of like where the visual stuff can really complement and kind of enhance the music. And love it.
And in terms of your live show, sonically and visually, what does that tend to look like?
Yeah, well, it's all very new. I've got a new band, and we've only really done two shows so far. So there's album launches coming up in Sydney and Melbourne in September, and I'm very excited about those. So yeah, we've got, it's going to be a 6-piece band. So there's drums and bass and guitars and synths and backing vocals. It's all quite a lot of wonderful stuff. And visually, yeah, I need to work out some outfits. There's going to be, you know, a lot of moons and stars around. It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be a big and beautiful spectacle, a little bit fun and silly and, you know, moments of earnestness as well.
And you have played like a short amount of shows with Georgia Mooney, but also have played a number of shows in another band, all Alex's Live in Texas, which you are one quarter of. And yeah. I guess my question for you is, across these two projects, what has been like a gig highlight for you and also a gig horror story where it's all gone a little bit haywire?
Oh, boy. Well, highlights and horror stories. I mean, there's so many, particularly horror stories, to choose from. Highlights as well. There's been really wonderful ones. I mean, yeah, with X's, we were really lucky. We did loads and loads of touring. We went to the States a lot, and we went around the UK and Ireland and in Europe quite a lot as well. And all around Australia, basically played every festival there is. And I mean, yeah, it's really hard to pick favourite things. I mean, an obvious one that jumps out is when we opened for the Backstreet Boys and we did an arena tour of the country, which was very fun because I was such a big fan of them when I was in year five. And so that definitely fulfilled some tween dreams, and I'll never get over it. But also, you know, we played, like, I don't know why I've just suddenly thought of this, but I remember we played a festival in the Netherlands or Denmark, I think, once. And we didn't, it was so nice because, I mean, it was full. Whenever you go overseas where you've never been and you play a festival and people turn up, it to this day is remarkable to me. I just think, wow, they've obviously just read a brochure and thought, these sound all right, we'll go along. So it was totally packed, which is amazing. But someone said to us beforehand, they said, oh, just so you know, at the end of every song, people will applaud and then they'll start to clap, like all in unison, like clap, 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 clap. Like everyone will just, without fail, clap in unison. And that was that, and they did. It was the weirdest thing, and I still don't understand. So yeah, at the end of every song it would be like normal clapping, yay, and then everyone together would be like boom, 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 boom. It was really
kind of crazy how they all managed to get in sync as well, like on in between every song.
I know, it was sort of like, you're like, oh, it'll be a lovely time. Oh my God, we're being attacked by zombies. Like it was like everyone was sort of momentarily possessed. But yeah. That was a weird one. not really a horror story, but just a weird moment. And then trying to think of a horror story. There was one time where we played it was very early on in our touring career, but we played at Bondi Open Air Cinema, opening for The Hunger Games, which was on at the movies, and they booked us for some reason to play before The Hunger Games. No one who was going to the movies expected there to be a band and yeah. was visibly annoyed. They were like very visibly annoyed that we were there. And but we pushed on and we played for half an hour, and it was like the kind of mental barrier between gig and movies hadn't been crossed. So no one applauded. It was like, instead of watching a live show, they thought they were sort of watching like a very sad documentary about the band.
Oh my gosh.
And so no one applauded. It was the weirdest thing, because that's normally just not even, it's normally just sort of like an automatic response that at least people will clap, you know, in a slapdash way. But yeah, nothing. And then at one point, even we finished a song and we saw a little boy who went to applaud, and then his mum was like, no
way, oh my gosh. It's like that thing where you have to be silent while you're watching a movie, but no one's actually watching the movie, so everyone's awkwardly standing around.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that's fine. It's just very strange egret-bruising moments. There's plenty of those.
Well, my final question is that if somebody had just stumbled across the Georgia Mooney Project and had never heard your music before, what are three of your songs that you would want to recommend them to listen to upon first impression?
Oh, okay. Well, I would say probably my current favourite is War Romance, which is the first single, which is, very dramatic, romantic one about sort of looking for love at the end of the world. And then I would say maybe I'm Not in a Hurry, which is the second one in the album, which is by contrast much more mellow and kind of contemplative. And then maybe I'd have to say Break It Off with the, you know, with the Cumberbatch line and but yeah, be sure to watch the video with the Retro Sweat Girls.
Awesome.
The first three, I think.
Unreal. Great. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been great.
Oh, yeah, thanks for chatting with me.
No worries. I'll never have the heart to leave you if I know.